Listening Library presents Lord of the Flies by William Golding. Read for you by the author.
My name's William Golding, and I wrote this book, Lord of the Flies, in I think it was either 1953 or 1954. There have been a great many things said about how it came to be written, and I don't know whether any of them are true or not. As far as I'm concerned, it happened because one day I was sitting one side of the fireplace and my wife was sitting the other, and I suddenly said to her, wouldn't it be a good idea to write a story about some boys on an island showing how they would really behave, being boys and not little saints as they usually are in children's books? And she said, that's a first-class idea, you write it. So I went ahead and wrote it. When girls say to me, and very reasonably, why isn't it a bunch of girls, and why did you write this about a bunch of boys? Well, my reply is, I was once a little boy. I have been a brother. I have been a father. I am going to be a grandfather. I have never been a sister or a mother or a grandmother. So this is why I wrote it really about little boys. That's one answer. Another answer is, of course, to say that if you, as it were, scale down human beings, scale down society, if you land with a group of little boys, they are more like scaled down society than a group of little girls would be. Don't ask me why, and this is a terrible thing to say because I'm going to be chased from hell to breakfast by all the women who talk about equality. This is nothing to do with equality at all. I mean, I think women are foolish to pretend they're equal to men. They're far superior and always have been. But one thing you cannot do with them is take a bunch of them and boil them down, so to speak, into a set of little girls who would then become a kind of image of civilization, of society. That's another reason why they were little boys. The other thing is, why aren't they little boys and little girls? Well, if they'd been little boys and little girls, we being who we are, sex would have raised its lovely head. And I didn't want this book to be about sex. I mean, sex is too trivial a thing to get in with a story like this, which was about the problem of evil and the problem of how people are to live together in society, not just as lovers or man and wife. Well, to begin with chapter one, which is called The Sound of the Shell. The boy with fair hair lowered himself down the last few feet of rock and began to pick his way towards the lagoon. Though he had taken off his school sweater and trailed it now from one hand, his grey shirt stuck to him and his hair was plastered to his forehead. All round him, the long scar smashed into the jungle was a bath of heat. He was clambering heavily among the creepers and broken trunks when a bird, a vision of red and yellow, flashed upwards with a witch-like cry, and this cry was echoed by another. "Hi," it said, "wait a minute." The undergrowth at the side of the scar was shaken, and a multitude of raindrops fell, pattering. "Wait a minute," the voice said. "I got caught up." The fair boy stopped and jerked his stockings with an automatic gesture that made the jungle seem for a moment like the home counties. The voice spoke again. "Can't hardly move with all these creeper things." The owner of the voice came backing out of the undergrowth, so that twigs scratched on a greasy windbreaker. The naked crooks of his knees were plump, caught and scratched by thorns. He bent down, removed the thorns carefully, and turned round. He was shorter than the fair boy and very fat. He came forward, searching out safe lodgements for his feet, and then looked up through thick spectacles. "Where's the man with a megaphone?" The fair boy shook his head. "This is an island. At least, I think it's an island. That's a reef out in the sea. Perhaps there aren't any grown-ups anywhere." The fat boy looked startled. "There was that pilot. But he wasn't in the passenger tube. He was up in the cabin in front." The fair boy was peering at the reef through screwed-up eyes. "All them other kids," the fat boy went on. Some of them must have got out. They must have, mustn't they? The fair boy began to pick his way as casually as possible towards the water. He tried to be offhand and not too obviously uninterested, but the fat boy hurried after him. "Aren't there any grown-ups at all?" "I don't think so." The fair boy said this solemnly. But then the delight of a realized ambition overcame him. In the middle of the sky, he stood on his head and grinned at the reversed fat boy. "No grown-ups." The fat boy thought for a moment. "That pilot." The fair boy allowed his feet to come down and sat on the steamy earth. "He must have flown off after he dropped us. He couldn't land here, not in a plane with wheels. We was attacked. He'll be back all right." The fat boy shook his head. "When we was coming down, I looked through one of them windows. I saw the other part of the plane. There were flames coming out of it." He looked up and down the scar. "And this is what the tube done." The fair boy reached out and touched the jagged end of a trunk. For a moment he looked interested. "What happened to it?" he asked. "Where's it got to now?" "That storm dragged it out to sea. Wasn't half dangerous with all them tree trunks falling. There must have been some kids still in it." He hesitated for a moment, then spoke again. "What's your name?"
"Ralph."
The fat boy waited to be asked his name in turn, but this proffer of acquaintance was not made. The fair boy called Ralph smiled vaguely, stood up, and began to make his way once more towards the lagoon. The fat boy hung steadily at his shoulder. "I expect there's a lot more of us scattered about. You haven't seen any others, have you?"
Ralph shook his head and increased his speed.
Then he tripped over a branch and came down with a crash. The fat boy stood by him, breathing hard. "My auntie told me not to run," he explained, "on account of my asthma."
"Asthma?"
"That's right. Can't catch me breath. I was the only boy in our school what had asthma," said the fat boy with a touch of pride, "and I've been wearing specs since I was free." He took off his glasses and held them out to Ralph, blinking and smiling, and then started to wipe them against his grubby windbreaker. An expression of pain and inward concentration altered the pale contours of his face. He smeared the sweat from his cheeks and quickly adjusted the spectacles on his nose. "Them fruit." He glanced round the scar. "Them fruit," he said. "I expect..." He put on his glasses, waded away from Ralph, and crouched down among the tangled foliage. "I'll be out again in just a minute."
Ralph disentangled himself cautiously and stole away through the branches.
In a few seconds, the fat boy's grunts were behind him, and he was hurrying towards the screen that still lay between him and the lagoon. He climbed over a broken trunk and was out of the jungle. The shore was fledged with palm trees. These stood or leaned or reclined against the light, and their green feathers were 100 feet up in the air. The ground beneath them was a bank covered with coarse grass, torn everywhere by the upheavals of fallen trees, scattered with decaying coconuts and palm saplings. Behind this was the darkness of the forest proper and the open space of the scar. Ralph stood one hand against a grey trunk and screwed up his eyes against the shimmering water. Out there, perhaps a mile away, the white surf flinked on a coral reef, and beyond that the open sea was dark blue. Within the irregular arc of coral, the lagoon was still as a mountain lake, blue of all shades, and shadowy green and purple. The beach between the palm terrace and the water was a thin bow-stave, endless, apparently, for to Ralph's left the perspectives of palm and beach and water drew to a point at infinity. And always, almost visible, was the heat. He jumped down from the terrace. The sand was thick over his black shoes, and the heat hit him. He became conscious of the weight of his clothes, kicked off his shoes fiercely, and ripped off each stocking with its elastic garter in a single movement. Then he leapt back on the terrace, and pulled off his shirt, and stood there among the skull-like coconuts, with green shadows from the palms and the forest sliding over his skin. He undid the snake clasp of his belt, lugged off his shorts and pants, and stood there naked, looking at the dazzle.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?